Hello, good evening, and you're very welcome along to our Life and Times programme here on Midlands 103. And today I've stayed in the county of Offaly, and I've travelled over to a place where I read an article once upon a time in the Irish Times, and it said that if you're watching the TV, if you're watching Sky News or ITV or something like that, and you saw ambulances flying around outside of Greater Manchester or down in Leicester and places like this, the chances are that those ambulances were made in the small town of Clara in the county of Offaly. And the man responsible for that is our guest this evening, and that's Noel Kerrigan. Noel, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you, Albert.
Where did it all start? You're a Clara man, are you?
Well, yes, I'm a Clara man, born and reared in Clara, yeah.
Your dad was?
William Kerrigan, and he originated from Roan in the county of Offaly as well and moved to Clara.
What did he do?
He was an upholsterer by trade, and when he moved into Clara then he took up residence in where we currently are. It's the same property we were in.
That's just as you come in from the Tullamore side.
Yeah, that's
before
that's
you turn right over the bridge.
Yeah, correct. It's on the left-hand side as you come in through from the Tullamore direction. It's on the left-hand side there, opposite the river bridge.
And what did he start doing? Was it upholstery?
Upholstery in the early stages, and then continued to do that. And he was a very dab hand at antiques, and he loved the antique furniture. And he had a lot of contacts throughout his career with people and antique furniture and that. And he was very good at that.
What was he like?
Great guy.
Was he?
Absolutely. Absolutely, great guy. He was probably best friend as well as a dad.
Good way to have him.
Oh yeah, absolutely. He was great. He was a great ambassador for the company as well, and just an all around great guy.
And your mum then is
Annie Kerrigan, again from the outskirts of the Dangan area, where my mum came from.
And what brought him into Clara? Was it good buddies or was it?
No, I think it was an opportunity. He had served his time in Dublin with a couple of companies in Dublin back in his early times, and then he moved to Clara. He played a lot of football. He played for Roan. He had a couple of medals for the Roan, and then he played for Clara. He played football for Clara in his time as well, and he was a good GA man. You know, he worked hard. At
so what year would they have moved to Clara?
Oh, gosh, it's way back. Would have been in the early 40s, I would say.
And Clara, of course, was quite a sizable employer of a town.
Clara was a
money there.
Goodbody's were there and very strong at the time, and Ranks Mills were there as well, and Goodbody's would have been the bigger employer there, and had a lot of people employed there at the time. So, but I mean, he started very humbly. It was a very humble beginning. He had worked for a lot of farmers in the area before branching out, because obviously trying to survive was a bit of a problem at that time. But from what I understand and know of it from conversations with him in the past, is that you know, he worked for various farmers around about the area trying to earn a living,
that would
alongside
have been tough.
Yeah, alongside doing some of the furniture
Was there many of you in the house?
There was just the three of us. Two. I have two sisters and myself. That's
and
it.
And your sisters are
Betty and Mary.
And are they still
both living in Clara? Yeah.
None of you went far.
Nobody went too far away. No.
So he was handy with antiques, as you said, primarily furniture.
Furniture was he? Yeah, he served his time, as I said, in furniture, and he worked at that. A lot of people around the area from all over would have travelled to him for various types of furniture and that. And then he travelled to Dublin to auctions and that, bought furniture, brought it back and repaired it. And
so he did a bit of trading there as well.
Yeah, yeah.
So the apple didn't fall far from the
tree. Probably not, no.
Did he stay in furniture all the time or...?
No, the furniture was something he was always good at. But then there was a lot of interest at the time, going back in the 50s. We probably would be into the mid-50s or mid to late 50s, where there was a sort of a trend for minibuses and a couple of lads in the town. There was great people around, and including Tullamore. Friends of his, J.J. Carr was a great
bus man. Dead now, what, three years almost?
J.J., great friend of my dad's, Walter Ennis, Pat Ennis, Jim Ennis. They were all great men. And the Kennys, of course, at Clara, were great mentors as well. And they kind of approached him on a few occasions, and he was doing work, seat repairs on buses for them, you see. So I think it might have been either J.J. or certainly Brendan or Ray Kenny, and Ray is dead now, or be good to him. And Ray would have been a great ambassador for the bus business at that time. So he had introduced my dad to the buses and the seating industry and the seats manufacturing in buses and that. So he started to make seats for buses at that stage, and then eventually started to chop them up and put windows and seats into them.
Into the actual, so the
yeah.
The
so you take the a you take an ordinary standard van, and at that time there were transits. The old Commers yeah. were popular at the time, and the old Thames, and convert them. Panelled them and plied
and all this done in your backyard?
And that was actually done in the front yard. There was no building there at all. It was done on a raised up ramp at the front of the old building that was there.
And wouldn't have been half the kind of sophisticated equipment that you have actually, now. A lot of very high skill and and all of that.
Yeah, absolutely, and there was nothing actually housed. When I think back, there was nothing housed. It was outside. Everything was done outside.
Outside.
No pits, no lifts, no nothing.
Hardy days.
Yeah, and the frost and snow, yeah.
As from your childhood, Noel, what was life like growing up in Clara?
Oh, sure, it was great. I mean, Clara's a nice place. I'm very fond of Clara. I married a Tullamore girl. Outside Tullamore, Kathleen.
Where did you meet her?
We met at a dance, and she actually worked in Tullamore, so that's how we kind of met, and it grew from there, and we sort of hung around together, and I tormented the life over for a long number of years.
But before we go back now a small little bit, like what used to get up to now as a young for yourself?
Yeah, sure. I used to play the football. I had a bit of involvement with football. I wasn't very good. I wasn't as good as my dad, and had an interest in most of all was I was into mechanics of every description.
Were you?
Trucks and cars, and done a bit of rallying, done a bit of autocross, done a bit of mucking around, and built my own cars and. Yeah, done a bit of that in the early stages as well. But from school, when I got out of school, I just threw the bag in the corner, and I headed off to probably the local garage. Fred Payne is still there. Billy's there now. But Fred used to throw the bag in the corner and head down to Payne's garage.
How far did you go in school?
Went all the way up to the vocational school and done my leaving cert at the time. But it was the... what was it at the time? The group cert, I think it was at that stage.
Right.
And just got my honours in, pass or honours in math, in
Did you know what you wanted to be?
Actually, I hadn't a clue at that stage. No.
So what?
I knew I didn't want to be in school.
So your first job was where? No, would that have? What would you have?
Well, my first job was, I suppose, my first introduction to the job would have been with Fred Payne, where I worked. Sweeping and cleaning the garage and doing various oil changes, and then went out to the farmers and done.
Was he a dealership or was
no,
he
wasn't
any car at all?
He was a mechanic.
Somebody said that if you have a Saab and you wanted to get it sorted, go out there.
Mm-hmm, that would be the case. Yeah. I think Billy is still very prominent with his Saab industry.
The town of Clara itself, of course, then went through. You know, it had the highs, and obviously in your time you saw the lows coming into the town. And how did the town react to that?
I suppose a lot of it went over my head at that time because I was so busy doing other things and trying to be active. But I think the town coped pretty well with it at the time. There was a lot of bad vibes, I suppose, with politicians complaining about the town, and there was various rumours about what the town might turn into, or it might. And I think one politician had mentioned that they put grass grow in the middle of the town. The roads going into Clara, but that didn't happen. I think Clara progressed very well, and I think it's still progressing.
And it's on the cusp now of some great expansion.
Absolutely,
isn't it? There's a new
great
town centre,
great
planned.
Development going on there. I think it's a credit to everybody. I think it's good. In our industry, we just keep going, and we would employ and most of our employees would be from the locality.
Staying though with you were working in Payne's, and were you kind of an apprentice mechanic? Or
no, I went in there just as a grease monkey, kind of general dog's body. Yeah.
Was your father also doing hearses at the time?
That came a little bit later. That actually came in probably about 5-6 years after we getting involved in the buses. And then at that stage, I kind of came into the fold then at that stage. I'm about 33 years in the business now currently. So I came in at around about that stage, and probably in the 70s.
So, I mean, obviously what was happening here is that Kerrigan's, your father, Bill Kerrigan, was word of mouth was spreading, and he was known for the quality and the work, and that was coming into him, and of course he was getting bigger gradually.
Absolutely. When the ambassadors again was, if you go back to J.J. Carroll and Walter Ennis and the Kennys, they were great ambassadors. I mean, they went out and sold the product. I remember one day coming in with all my guns blazing and saying, you know, we should really get some brochures and catalogues organised, Dad, and let's do this thing right. And he says, no, hang on a minute, we don't need those. He said, if you build a good product, it'll be there, it'll sell itself. And that was it.
Very much so, because it's a very, the bus community would be a tight enough community.
Well, you see, there would be a sort of an industry to themselves, and they'd meet at bingo or dances at that time, wherever. And the bingo was very popular. Most busmen would meet up, whether it be in Moat or Bor or Athlone, and they would have a great conversation about where buses were built. And it generated industry from that. And then buses came from Donegal. We had customers in Donegal all the way up to the top end of Donegal.
Noel, when you were working in Payne's, you stayed there for a couple of years.
I stayed there for a little. A lot of my summers would have been there, and then
you also said you're working for farmers.
Yeah, I done a lot of work with farmers.
But what kind of work?
Well, I used to do a lot of tractor driving. No, they don't have buses. But you see, I was a fly by night. I didn't know what I wanted at that stage, kind of settled in nowhere. No. And I done a lot of work for farmers and driving tractors and combines and that. And
you were waiting for life to point you in the direction.
Yeah, I was waiting for something to sort me out, I guess. And I worked in some of the local farmers, friends of ours as well, family friends, and done some work there, summer work in particular. And then I worked for the Sires. They were contract silage cutters. And I went and
that's a tough number.
Yeah,
though.
We done that. I done
early
that
morning, late at night, going done the beat, eating on the
On the hoof and done the beat. We used to do a lot of the beat work and around Eton Derry and Ratangan, over around that area, right up into Kinnegad. So. Yeah.
Did you reach a stage, Noel, where you sort of said, God, I better get some sort of a plan in place here, or I'm going to end up this for the rest of my life? Or?
Yeah, I did. I went driving trucks then. I got a job with Pat Jennings then. Pat was in Clara, and Pat's a great friend and a great industry here in the town.
Oh, huge.
Great, great man, and gave me an opportunity in my life to get involved in truck driving, and was the first man to put me into a truck. I was about 18 or 19 at the time, and he put me into a truck, I remember it well, and it went from there, and I started to drive.
Can you remember the truck you
I
first
I do, it was a Bedford.
A Bedford?
Yep.
A very common, very, very practical, very reliable.
Yeah, it was a great truck. It used to sway all over the place with about 12, 13 ton on it, and he'd head for Swinford with brickets or something like that. Yeah, he had the contract for the hospital runs and that, so I'd done a good bit of that, and I was always thankful to him for that. That was a great opening for me, and that was a nice...
It seems like you went off and, you know, you had the opportunity in the family business, of course, but you went off and kind of gained experience and a bit of work.
I did. I had no interest in the upholstery, you see, and I used to sit down at the machine with my dad, and he'd say, saw that, and I hadn't a clue. I couldn't get an appetite for the furniture.
And when did the hearse start?
The hearses came into being some short time after we got involved, probably in around about the late 70s.
What age were you, you went off driving trucks and so forth, did you go from the trucks then into the...
Came from the trucks then back, because I think Pat gave me the opportunity, because he increased, he opened an agency and he gave me the opportunity then, where we used to do a lot of work on cabs of trucks. So that kind of gave me the incentive at that stage.
What would you do in the cabs?
Well, at that time he was very much involved with the Hino truck, and he was selling quite a number
still
of the
is.
Hino trucks, and still is. But the Hino truck was very basic when it came into Ireland. So Pat seen the opportunity of upgrading the Hino truck, whereby he decided he'd trim it out inside and make it look good and redo all of the seats with different upholstery.
Make it more comfortable.
And make it very comfortable truck for the drivers.
Because a lot of the times we forget that truck drivers are in that for 8, 10, 12 hours.
Correct, yeah.
And that's their work environment.
That's where they live.
Yeah.
And so he thankfully gave me the opportunity to go and start lining and trimming trucks for him.
And you did that at home?
We done that. Dad and I took that contract on, and that was the kind of the start of it. There was a shed out the back, which was not ours. The property where we currently are was not ours at the time. I remember a storm blowing down the old hay shed at the back. There was a hay shed there, and there was hay in it, and it demolished the shed. So I got at it one day. I got rid of my dad and got at this shed, and we put up a makeshift of an old shed, and we worked from there for a long number of years with no door.
Fascinating.
Yeah, so that was the first probably shed or workshop we had.
Midlands 103's Life and Times. This evening we're in conversation with Clara's Noel Kerrigan. We're going to take a short commercial break. We'll be right back in just 2 minutes' time. You're very welcome back to our Life and Times programme here in Midlands 103 on this Tuesday evening. Noel Kerrigan is our guest, and it's quite a fascinating story he's telling about Wilker Auto Conversions in Clara. Because I think that's the name of the company, isn't it, Wilker?
Yeah.
Named in honour of your father.
Yeah, that's right. We started out with Kerrigan and Son, and then we went to Auto Conversions. It was a company that we formed. And then he died And I wanted to hang on to some, keep a memory going whereby his name would be for there forever, because in my opinion it should be. So the name William Kerrigan, we broke it down into Will Kerr, and hence the brand name Wilker. So we brand our vehicles as Wilker, and a lot of people in the past have actually come to me and said, you know, who's this funny name, this Wilker bit, you know, is it a German company? I hear somebody's bought you over. And I said, no, it's just my dad's name. And then, you know, when they figure that out, it's okay.
Fair play. Let's go back to the lean-to out the back. So your working Pat Jennings has given you the opportunity to kind of expand. Your father has obviously come along with you.
Mm-hmm.
And you're out the back, and at this stage now you're putting all the trim and so forth into high note trucks.
At this stage, yeah, and of course my dad's skill was important, because he had to trim all the seats. That was something I was not in a position or couldn't do or didn't want to do. So I used to break his heart, and he would do that. He'd have to do that in between the furniture.
Was it just the two of you that were working?
Just the two of us at that stage, yeah.
What happened next?
Well, at that stage we became very busy in the trucks. Pat was selling trucks pretty quickly, and we had the more he sold, the better we were doing.
Yes.
We got involved with some paint work and other decorative work on trucks as well at that stage. So I got involved in painting and doing some other welding and work on that. So I've done some repair work for him as well. So he kept me quite busy for a good number of years, and really set it up for me and gave me an interest, because that's what I needed. I knew where I was going then at that stage. Yeah, I had some focus. So
we're now going to go back to the hearses, because I'm after asking now twice, and I've derailed you when you've got to answer. When the hearses, they would have started off around this time.
The hearses would have came in, we'd say about 15 years ago, the hearses came in. Well, we could actually go back 20 years with the hearses, because the trucks kept us going. We continued to do some of the trucks, and the minibus business got a little bit busier, because the local lads then were probably becoming a little bit more popular. Instead of the onesies and the twosies every, you know, 5-6 months, there was now maybe a steady flow of vehicles coming in on the van conversions, and they were on Ford Transit, the old Ford Transit. They were very popular at the time. So at that stage, we started to manufacture our own seats. And a local chap, actually, Liam Dignam. Because we had no welder or any equipment at the time, Liam used to put the seats together for us, and my dad used to
put the frames
them.
Together.
Yeah,
and
Liam would make up the frames then at that stage, and we would then get along, and dad would trim them out, and I'd fit.
I heard our Minister for Finance talking about your company one time in quite glowing terms, and he was talking. I think he's. Was his father an undertaker? Were they undertakers?
Yeah, actually, Brian's dad, Burkown, would, I remember going over one day, Bear had called over on a couple of occasions. He would be a regular visitor for a chat and that. And he had raised the subject about undertaking and hearses, and I think that's where it would have started in our thoughts anyway. And he had suggested to me dad, he said, there's an old car over there in the yard, he said, and if you'd like to have it, he says, be my guest, take the car, he says, and build your first hearse on it. And that's where we started on the hearses, and that would have been as a result of Burkown, Lord of Mercy on him. He started that hearse business there as well. Would have a link to the Cowans there, and we again would be very grateful to Bear at that stage, because that was something, and we built that hearse. And it was a great sales product for us, and we did sell it eventually.
Wow. So I know that hearses are, you might see, like, you know, the Ford Granada, but it's called, is it called the Cardinal or something?
Yeah,
or
that would be the UK industry. There's a Coleman Mills company and a few companies in the UK, and they had them Cardinals, and they had various names on them,
So here you are now, you've a few Hinos running through the place, a couple of hearses, the minibuses are going through.
Yeah.
Yourself and the father now, they must have been help at this stage.
Well, at that stage, it was getting a little bit cramped where we were, and we decided we'd have to increase the property. Now, we still had no offices, no nothing. We had an old trailer shack out the back, and we had the phone in that, and all the documents. And he was doing all the paperwork. I was just doing the hard grafting at that time.
Good man.
I left him to do that.
If you could see the smile on your face now.
He was better off doing that to me. So we had a round table meeting one morning, and decided we would build a larger, newer property. Which we did. I do remember saying to him, you know, who's going to pay for it? I said, somebody will pay for it. We'll sort it. And that was his attitude, you know. He was always positive about a lot of things. And we went and built it. And it was about, around about 3,500-4,000 square feet.
Sizable enough.
Sizable enough. It was a big undertaking.
What year was that? Ish.
It would have been in the 70s, late 70s, I would have thought, in around about maybe, Yeah, it would have been about mid-70s.
So you're not just talking about a premises, I think, at this stage. At this stage, you must obviously be talking about bigger pieces of equipment coming in and...
At that stage, we didn't have much equipment. We went to Dublin with the car and trailer, and we brought back a tool for cutting steel at that stage. And I remember we didn't even pay for it at the time. We came back and we got it on credit and put it into operation. We bought a welder and a few bits and pieces like that, and started from there. I mean, it was basically hand tools at the time, so you'd be... It didn't need quite a lot of tools at that stage, you know, jigsaws for the timber work and ordinary bench saws for a lot of the other, because it was mostly timber we were using. There was no steel other than in the seat frames.
Of course.
So all of the side lining on buses, all of the reinforcement, the integral frame was all made from timber, and the roof lining was all made from timber, and all of the side linings were painted, were sprayed. So we had our compressor and we would spray those, and it was a sort of a matte finish, almost similar to your blackboards.
And where did you go to then after this then? You were like, what was the next line of stuff?
Well, at that stage then we got a lot of interest. We probably started to market a little bit more then. Word of mouth was okay, and we did introduce the product into the marketplace by means of a small flyer, a leaflet type thing, which was only very simple. It wasn't anything fancy, and we had made quite a number of friends in the health service. And they had approached us to do what was known at that time was dual-purpose ambulances, which was a minibus that would be designed to transfer maybe elderly from one hospital to another, in particular down south, where we would just convert a standard minibus where we maybe put in a bench seat, a longer seat, so people could lie on it if they got tired from the long journey.
A place for wheelchairs in the back, maybe.
Wheelchairs at that time, not so common, but elderly people who would have maybe walking aids and who would be less than able to sit or, you know, on a seat from on a journey from maybe Kilkenny to Dublin.
So what wasn't like, wouldn't have been very sophisticated?
Absolutely not. Very basic at that stage.
Yeah.
But they were, I suppose, they were a step above the standard ambulance at that stage. And we weren't building ambulances. I had no intention of building ambulances.
Well, how did that start, Noel? How did you, because you're known for ambulances, and the vehicles that come out of your yard are the most sophisticated vehicle you can imagine. I mean, the electronics alone on them are just...
Yeah, they are. They're pretty much up there now.
When did they start? Or when did the ambulances start?
Well, the ambulances came on board immediately after the minibuses. So you're talking about 25 years. The ambulances would have switched on, because through our contacts with the health services, we building the minibuses and doing the dual purpose vehicles for the ambulance service. Of course, the other side of that was the business in Longford, Hanlon. Ambulance manufacturers was going at that stage, so that from our point of view, and we talked about it, both my dad and I, and we had debated and said, look, there's no point in trying to get into that business because that guy has the markets tied up, which he had. And we were approached by a number of health board officers who would have been chief ambulance officers at that time, and who had said, look, guys, you should give it a try. I mean, you're doing the dual purpose vehicles, and you know, give it a bash. So we did. We converted a number of van conversions into ambulances at that stage, because Hanlon in Longford was building the fiberglass vehicle, which was the purpose-built coach build.
Which you would just get kind of like a flatbed coming, a flatbed and fit down the whole.
Sure, it'd be a chassis, and then their structure was ash and fiberglass, and that was a huge job. So we didn't see ourselves going in there. So we continued at the van conversion for 3-4 years, and then gradually the Longford firm got into difficulty, and we seen an opportunity and said, well, hey, let's have a go.
Right.
And we went and we designed our own vehicle.
This is the Lunar.
We go back to the first one would have been the Tar ambulance, which I named after my daughter, Tara.
Right.
So that was the first one.
So you have two kids?
I have two children, Mark and Tara. Yeah.
What age is Mark?
Mark is 29.
What does he do?
Mark is in the UK now. He came on board in the firm. He's now in the UK. He runs the second end of our business.
Okay, we come back to that. And Tara?
Tara has worked with the company for a long number of years. She wanted to broaden her horizons, and she now works in Interlink in Athlone.
Ah, okay. So good morning, Tara, if you're listening.
Yeah.
Good evening. We used to go out on Saturday morning. The Tara then.
The Tara ambulance was the first fiberglass one we introduced, and we built that and we launched that in the UK to the UK market. That was the first.
How did you launch it to the UK?
Yeah, we just decided that we'd hit the market. I suppose it's like everything else. We felt that it's an Irish firm. We did feel, I suppose, at that stage underdogs, but thought, well, it's a good product. We have it in Ireland now for a year, year and a half. It's selling well. Why not try the UK market? And the launch pad for that would have been in the ambulance exhibition. They run these ambulance exhibitions where you have a large amount of ambulance manufacturers showing the product. So we booked a stand and brought it over and sold a few as a result of it. And stayed at it. And at that stage, we were building the fiberglass units in Clara.
How long ago was that now?
Oops, you're killing me on dates. Well, you're still around the 20 years ago, 25 years.
Back in the 80s.
Yeah, back in the
80s. How many were working in at this stage? Because at this moment in time, you're quite a significant employer. I know you have 60 or 70 staff.
Yeah, 60 or 70 there now in Clara currently at the present time.
But you must have been like building at this stage.
Well, we started with just the two of us, and then we walked up to about five or six. And then when we were continued to do the Lunar Ambulance, we had up to, well, when we went over to the Tara Ambulance, we had about maybe 25 people to 40, 25 to 30 people.
It's a nice little growth story.
Yeah, it was. And then we went in, we designed then a purpose built Lunar, which we launched in Tullamore here in the 80s. I think it was around about 89 or 90, we would have launched that one here, which was the first. Of our own new design, aerodynamic design.
Fantastic.
And we'd invested quite a substantial amount of money in that product. It had a short lifespan because the aluminium more or less took over in 5-7 years after that. And we unfortunately, that product that we currently use is a product that we enlisted from Canada. We had it designed in Ireland but manufactured in Canada. Only company that could produce it. We tried several companies in Ireland to try and produce but couldn't. Not efficiently and certainly not to the standards that we required.
Because the ambulances themselves, now I've recently toured your workshop, and the ambulances are quite sophisticated pieces of kit.
Yeah, they are. The intelligence and the whole concept of that new vehicle now is probably, I mean, for Ireland now, we were probably looked upon 5-6 years ago as having a very depleted ambulance fleet.
Yes.
And certainly an old ambulance fleet and not a modern ambulance fleet. But currently, in the last 5-6 years, the ambulance fleet for Ireland is certainly will surpass what's in the UK and in a lot of other countries.
How much does an ambulance cost?
It depends on the spec. It can go all the way for the total set of wheels and the fit out of the vehicle is somewhere in around about 150,000.
Wow.
Now that would be the top of the range vehicle.
Yeah.
Now a lot of vehicles would have trauma equipment on board and heart equipment on board. So it depends on the equipment.
You showed me one of the stretchers.
Yeah.
When I was in the last day I was in, and it was like 25,000 euros.
Yeah, you have a lot of
just for a stretcher.
Yeah, just for a stretcher. Now again, they're all tested equipment, and it's very much approved. And under the EU regulations, now we have to have everything that is certified.
Yeah, because I was going to ask you in terms of how technical the business is, but I need to take another commercial break. It's Life and Times here at Midlands 103. We're in conversation this evening with Noel Kerrigan. We'll be right back in just a couple of minutes' time. Life and Times of Midlands 103, and this evening we're in conversation and having a great conversation with Clara's Noel Kerrigan. Noel, we were talking before the break, just saying that, you know, up to €150,000 for an ambulance, or somewhere in between for a different standard of ambulance. But how many ambulances at this stage have you put through the place, would you think?
Oh, quite a number. But the 150 would include the VAT, so we have to remember the VAT.
The vodka tonic.
We used to get a few pound out of that as well.
Yeah.
Well, we would average about 150 a year.
Wow.
Of a particular type of vehicle. That would run alongside maybe minibuses and wheelchair accessible vehicles also.
Because because the ordinary, I mean, a lot of your custom now, you've a lot of ambulances I refer to in my introduction. I mean, I read this Irish Times article. And like the amount of ambulances that are running around the UK with Wilco around the back is enormous.
Yeah, it's good. Yeah, we did make a lot of inroads into the UK, which was good. We met good colleagues and good friends, and we built a good product. And I think because of the product, we ended up staying in the UK, and it is the biggest slice of the market for us.
Is there other markets, like, or is it too difficult with left-hand drive vehicles and other European countries?
No, we had the opportunity and will have the opportunity into the future to look at those other countries. Left-hand drive isn't an issue from our point of view. The product is there. It's a set of wheels and a chassis cab, so the box would remain the same. So that it can be mounted or bolted to any particular type of make of vehicle with slight engineering changes, i.e. wheel arches, heights, lengths, etc. for the various countries. That's not an issue. Equipment isn't an issue either. So no, we've looked at other countries and we've had the opportunity, but we've tended to concentrate and try and perfect both in the UK and Ireland. And when we're totally satisfied that we, which we are now, and we're there, and we get a lot of inquiries now from a lot of other countries, we will have the opportunity and are broadening our horizons a little bit more now, and we will probably look at that into the future.
The nature of the business must be competitive. Like, I know for argument's sake that, okay, you do quite a lot of ambulances and so forth, but you also do conversions for wheelchair accessible vehicles, you do community kind of ambulances.
Absolutely.
Which are, like you said, kind of above your standard minibus.
Yeah, well, we would specialise in wheelchair accessible vehicles, whether it be swivel seats, tail lifts for people who would need wheelchair accessed vehicles. A broad range of vehicles from Fords, Volkswagens, all the way down the line, big or small, doesn't much matter. We would cover most vehicles adaptations, also on the car range. And we would...
You convert for cars?
Yeah, you would have the car, the access vehicle, where you'd have a swivel seat for whether it be son, daughter, or whatever, who might be physically disabled.
Challenge, yeah. And the you also, so I've seen vehicles there, like from forestry and so forth, or vehicles. Or
rescue vehicles, mountain rescue vehicles, we would cover a wide range. Aircom, we're currently putting a contract through for Aircom. We're currently putting in...
Aircom, because I saw this as well. How many vehicles are going through from Aircom?
There's probably about 330, 340 vehicles going through for Aircom.
Sometimes we forget the scale, because you drive in over this bridge in Clara and you see this very small and, you know, you don't think...
Little secret place there.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
But 350 vehicles going through. I saw a lot. Do you know what I saw there? And I was going to ask you about it as well, is that if you remember in the film The Blues Brothers, there was the most amazing scene where they had hundreds of squad cars flying after us. Yeah. But if they wanted to get these squad cars, they should go to your yard. Yeah. Your yard is stuffed with squad cars.
Yeah, it is. We would produce an average of 54 of those a week for the squad cars. Yeah.
And the squad cars, they just come into you as ordinary cars?
Well, we would take in a base standard vehicle, whether it be Ford or whatever model, depending on the purchase order going through from the Garda. And we would equip those from top to toe.
Lights, beef up
lights,
electronics,
siren system, electronics, and the special window protection, and the outside deck alling is all fitted there. We're quite a good crew there.
You must have, because I counted about 40 brand new squad cars ready to go in, and then there was a load of unmarked cars.
Correct, yeah.
For the what's the units? The covert units.
They're covert units, and there'd be a lot of those vehicles coming through as well for the Garda. Yeah, so there'd be traffic, a lot of traffic corps vehicles going through there, and the prison units as well.
Yeah, because I saw another vehicle which had cells.
Yeah,
and there was four cells inside.
Yeah, we've developed a new unit for the Garda now, which would be the first of its kind for Ireland. Which has the new modern type cell unit in the back, and it's a seated area forward section of that.
Which makes absolutely common sense, because if you've a riot or something like that and you're putting people in, you don't want them fighting inside it. But these are to describe them, like you've what could be a Ford Transit van with four separate holding areas in.
Yeah, you've got a cell unit in the back. Again, it's demountable, so it can be removed from the vehicle when the vehicle
and
is
transferred, to the next
transferred into the next unit and move on from there. Yeah.
What's the most unusual vehicle you've done?
Ooh, cripes. Oh. Well, we've done quite a number. We've done drugs units, mobile hospitals, various types of units. We've a couple of new mobile units going through now for the Mary Keating Foundation.
Yes.
We've a couple of units going through for the blood transfusions. So they're quite large and big, and they have a lot of different equipment. But we've a lot of different stuff coming through, and every day is exciting, every day is different, and a new challenge.
You have a UK operation?
We have a UK operation.
And your son Mark?
Mark is there. He's there with a manager, and he runs the shop floor. He's about 33 guys there that he leads around and has a good working relationship with. And they continue to manufacture on the van conversions. They build for Scotland currently there now. They have a batch going through, and for Wales as well. So they do a lot of the UK work in that area, and he's very active in that. He's coming up in 4 years there now, and he's been to Canada, developed a vehicle for a Canadian company as well, along the lines of what we were doing, and they're up and running with that as well.
Where's it based in the UK?
Based in Cheshire, a little place called Sandbach. Sandbach, actually, and it's just outside Crewe. Nice, it's a lovely area. And of course, Crewe is very popular with Leyland and BMW. So there's a good structure for employees and a good craftsmen there.
You've achieved in a remarkable amount in the past number of years. I mean, you have this small little business, as we said, out in Clara. Mm-hmm. But some of the numbers you've been throwing there, I mean, the amount of ambulances, mm-hmm. the amount of squad cars, the mm-hmm. amount of aircon vans. Mm-hmm. What's competition like in your business, though?
Competition is tight enough, yeah. It's all tender process, and it is. And you have to be efficient on the ball and get your price right. You don't get a second bite of the cherry unless you're right. And we give a good service.
But you're not just competing locally in Ireland, no, you're competing internationally.
Absolutely, yeah, because they're all the
German
tenders,
firms.
Yeah. Yeah, you're tendering against all of the UK firms, German firms coming into the marketplace and our own industry as well. There's a lot of other people carrying out the same type of product we're doing as well. So you're tendering.
How has your role changed now?
It hasn't much changed. I still like to be in the thick of everything, and I do a lot of selling and development and design and that, and I still haven't much changed really from where I was, and I'd like to think my feet are still on the ground.
Right. Do you still get a kick out of walking in the door?
I suppose I do, and I think I like the challenge of different products. I like the challenge of satisfying a customer. We would deal a lot with people who would have, that have handicap, people who would need special vehicles and special needs, and there's a great buzz out of developing a product that satisfies their needs, and I like doing that. That's enjoyable.
The business itself, I mean, we've only just barely touched on it, but I mean, you must have so many different skill sets required within the business.
Mm-hmm.
Do you find it difficult to source those skill sets, or because they're quite specialised, or do you train them in yourselves, and do you bring people in and bring them up to this level of craftsmanship?
At the start, it was difficult. At the start, I trained most of the guys, and then we would have had quite a number of lads that would have came in the early stages, and they would have trained the people ongoing. And they're good lads. The Clara lads are good. They're interested. They have an interest in the organisation. They work hard, and I suppose you're on a level with them and stay. I mean, I get out on the floor and work with them as well. I don't have a hang-up about that.
What do you do to relax now, Noel?
Ah,
what are the hobbies?
Oh, well,
it's a pressurised business keeping 70 people paid every week. Or
well, I suppose Kathleen would have an opinion on that as well. She probably, if she's seen more of me, she'd probably be happier. But then again, maybe if she's seen more of me, she'd want to get rid of me quicker. But I played a bit of golf. I enjoy that when I get out with a couple of my colleagues, and we do that of a Saturday. And I enjoy. I took up motorcycle riding about a year and a half, 2 years ago.
Did you? What kind? Hill or road?
No? I just cruising. I bought a Goldwing, a Honda Goldwing for myself, and I enjoy that. When we get out, a friend of mine, Johnny Finnerty, and myself, we head off there from time to time. And
beautiful machine.
And it's a nice pastime.
Beautiful
and, mind you, Kathleen doesn't quite. She misses me when I'm gone. Well, right. At least she says she does. Maybe she doesn't. But yeah, I enjoy that, and I that's about it. And I enjoy being active. And
what does the future hold now?
Oh, one never knows. I just never think of maybe any further than today. I don't know. Who knows? Maybe someday I might relax a little bit more.
Would you change anything?
You probably would change certain things, yeah. But then again, don't know. It's hard to know. I wouldn't change what I've done in the past. My achievements, I think. My dad, he achieved a lot. I'd like to think that I held on to some of his talents and his skills, and certainly his
whole
attitude in life. I think if I held on to a little bit of that and got to I suppose, to be where I am now. I wouldn't have got to where I am now without him, I suppose.
I'm just going to say that it seems that the Bill and Noel Kerrigan combination, which was set down years ago, was a successful formula.
Absolutely.
And it seems to be working quite well, and congratulations on it. I mean, at the end of the day, to provide that sort of employment, especially in a town like Clara, which, you know, would rely heavily on something like that, is quite an achievement. And to keep a business like yours going, which is extremely competitive, and not just competitively locally, as we said, but is all tribute must be paid to you. Noel, I've enjoyed the past hour.
Thank you very much, Albert.
Thanks so much for coming in.
It's been a pleasure.
God bless. Noel Kerrigan, ladies and gentlemen, on this week's Life and Times. Good evening.